You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com. Mic check. Adjustment here. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm coming to you semi-live from the Sportsman's Empire in Full Sneak Gear headquarters, which is a loft above my garage that I did very shoddy drywall work and stud. You know, I built a stud wall, put on some drywall. Looks like absolute shit. But here we are, coming to you every week, doing this 10 years now, multiple episodes a week for the most part. There are some weeks that I've missed or some weeks that I only put out one episode. Regardless, today's episode is a good one, man. This is one of those episodes where this is real life, man. This episode is a real life episode. You know, we don't get deep into any type of hunting strategy. This is a story about a hunter and his son, right? Or actually a son and his father, and their journey, their story. And unfortunately, it doesn't end the way you kind of want it to. It ends on a positive note, but it still doesn't end the way that we all wish the end of stories happen, if that makes sense. That's kind of confusing, but this is a real life episode. Today we're joined by Travis Coulter of Kentucky, and he's going to share a story today about his father, his battle with alcoholism, buying a property and killing a deer in a big old oak tree, velvet buck, on opening day of 2021. And it's just an amazing story, man. I felt like from a podcasting host standpoint, I feel like I nailed this episode. Travis did a really good job telling the story and breaking it all down for us. And the outcome is just a piece of content that goes deeper than just deer hunting. It's real life, man. And I enjoyed recording this episode. I enjoy episodes like this where there is, you know, there's something about hunting that, and we talk about this in the episode, there's a lot of feelings and emotions that go along with it, especially when you involve family. And I'm going through that right now myself with my daughter and my sons, and going out and having my daughter shoot her first turkeys, you know, her first two birds this past weekend. And it was an amazing, amazing, amazing feeling that trumps every deer story that I have, every buck on my wall. That moment right there, that single moment that I was in the woods when she shot her first turkey. Now, you know, there's a lot of time left that, you know, stories could change. And from a ranking standpoint, I was in the woods doing something that I love with someone who I love, and they are enjoying this passion that I have for the outdoors with me. How does it get any better than that? It doesn't. Absolutely doesn't. And so there's pluses and minuses, like all stories. This one at times is difficult, but that's life, man. And so I'm not going to get into this episode. You're just going to have to listen any further. You're just going to have to listen to this. I do have to do some commercials real quick, and we'll get into this episode. But if you guys could do me a big favor, go to iTunes, go to Spotify, leave a review, let everybody know, or even YouTube now. I launch all my podcasts on YouTube, the video portion of it. If you go to YouTube, you'll be able to see Travis's buck. You can listen to it here, but then go check out the video on YouTube, and that will allow you to see the big buck that he ends up getting. If you're looking for a saddle hunting accessories, man, you got to check out Tethered. There is even a saddle story in this episode. So if you're looking for saddle hunting accessories, and even a way to educate yourself to become a better saddle hunter, go check out Tethered, tetherednation.com. Awesome company, awesome people, and really looking forward to getting back in a saddle this upcoming fall. Next on the list, Wasp Archery. I do have a discount code, NFC20. Yeah, Nine Finger Chronicles 20. That's 20% off all your Wasp broadheads. Most of their heads are still made in America. Best materials, high quality design, and you put a Wasp broadhead anywhere on a deer, you're getting a major wound channel that is very likely, and I'm not saying all bad shots result in death, but a very, very bad wound channel for that buck or that deer, it'd be hard to recover. WaspArchery.com. Vortex Optics, man. Be sure to check out their new eyewear that they have. I believe it is the Banshee and the Apache? The Banshee and... I don't know. I forget the other one. I'm not doing them justice right now. But vortexoptics.com for all your optics needs, rangefinder, spotting scopes, rifle scopes, you name it, along with their apparel line. Now they have sunglasses and protective eyewear that you guys need to go check out. Next on the list is Feed Hub. This is a very hunter specific product, right? So if you're using a spin cast feeder on your property, then this is almost like a must have, right? One thing, even running postseason bait piles for me, where it's not really bait piles, but I am feeding deer after the season is over and trying to get them to come in front of a trail camera. Feed Hub, what it is it's a device that connects to a spin cast feeder, and it allows you to remotely control and have on-demand features through the Moultrie mobile app that allows you to identify feed levels. You can run a little system thing, and I know this, it doesn't sound technical, but it allows you to remove clogs, clog feeder, run a little cycle that breaks the clog loose. And, you can monitor that. You can set specific times you want the feeder to go off. All that is connected through the Moultrie mobile app. So go to MoultrieMobile.com and check out the Feed Hub. Code Blue Sense, man. I'll be honest, the Rope-A-Dope coming here, I'm going to guess June is when I'm going to go out and I'm going to start putting scent on my Rope-A-Dopes and setting up mock scrapes. I want them to be investigating that all summer, all through September and October, so that when I get in the woods in the pre-rut time frame, they know about where these Rope-A-Dopes are hanging, and they're coming to investigate them on a regular basis. And so go to CodeBlueSense.com, take a look at all their real and synthetic deer lures, along with scent elimination products, and of course, the Rope-A-Dope system. Discount code NFC20. Woodman's Pal. Let's see here. Yeah, the Woodman's Pal. Man, just an absolute great tool for the guy who wants to have a solid Made in America machete or habitat tool in his car. Go to woodmanspal.com and check it out. Huntworth, man, big news coming out of Huntworth. I wish I could share it right now, but I got a little information from them. They're going to be doing something pretty cool, pretty big in the upcoming in the upcoming months, and I want everybody to take a look at it. I know right now people probably, I don't know, maybe you are, maybe I'm wrong, but people aren't too worried about their deer gear right now, their hunting gear right now. I'm guessing in the summer months, everybody starts getting back into it. But go to huntworthgear.com, check out all of their base layers, their layering system, and in my opinion, a really, really high quality, very affordable lineup of hunting gear and camo. And then last but not least, Woodman's Pal. Last but not least, we're talking with Full Sneak Gear. That's my company. I have a t-shirt that is getting printed this week. And as soon as it's printed, I am getting it up on the fullsneakgear.com website, and you'll be able to purchase it. Dude, we got a ton of great t-shirts. The next move, I believe, is going to be a hoodie. I got a hoodie. I need to get a hoodie up and running. I got a crew neck. I got a crew neck. I got several t-shirts. I got hats. I got stocking caps. Go check out fullsneakgear.com. And that's it. So please go out and support the companies that support this podcast. And go to iTunes. Leave a review. Subscribe. Go to the Nine Finger Chronicles and Sportsman's Empire Instagram, Facebook pages. I'm even on TikTok. Please go and sign up, click on them, like them, whatever they do on social media. I really don't care. Good vibes in, good vibes out, and enjoy the show. 3, 2, 1. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today's episode is brought to you by Tethered, Feed Hub, Vortex, Wasp Archery, Code Blue Sense, Woodman's Pal, Huntworth, and of course, Full Sneak Gear. Be sure to go out and investigate all those brands that I just mentioned. Go visit their website. Today, we have a guest, Travis Coulter. Coulter? Yep. All right, Travis Coulter.
Yes, sir.
Where do you hail from, Travis Coulter?
I'm from Central Kentucky. Yep. Grew up in Bardstown, and I'm still pretty close to it. So
yeah, Central Kentucky. Are you in the Appalachia region of that state?
Not really. That's okay. A little different. It's a little further east.
Okay.
What we're known for, I guess, where I'm from, is bourbon. It's Jim Beam, Heaven yep. Hill, Barton's. They're all right here. So
yep, I live so. Every time I talk with someone from Kentucky, right, I have to bring this up. I have a distillery called Cedar Ridge Distillery about 4 miles from my house, and they went to Kentucky to compete in a whole bunch of blind bourbon tasting competitions, and they mm-hmm. beat some of the bigger, well-known brands of bourbon. And so that's kind of our claim to fame here in this area, is that we have a bourbon distillery that competed very well against all the Kentucky bourbons.
Gotcha. No, yeah. That's pretty, especially around here. I mean, people really hold that high around
yeah, they
here.
Do. So. Yeah, they do. They do. Okay. You know, there's really no transition into what we're going to talk about today. So we're just going to rip the Band-Aid right off and talk about an event that happened in your life. You know, we could sit here and say that life is all roses, but we both know it's not. Mm-hmm. And so you reached out to me with a story that you'd like to share about a deer that you were able to shoot, you know, when did you shoot it?
2021.
Okay, in 2021. And but this story goes much deeper than just a dude who killed a buck, right? This mm-hmm. story is about family. It's about a connection between a father and son. And what year, so right off the bat, you lost your father. What year was that?
That would be 2020.
Okay. And so just fill us in real quick about what happened to him and then we'll get past that and we'll start talking about him in a different light.
Okay. Well, it was kind of, I mean, he had a little bit of a, to be honest, he had a drinking problem.
Okay.
You know, I know a lot of families deal with that, and I grew up with it.
Yeah.
But it was a, his heart shut down is what happened, and they think it was also alcohol-induced a little bit.
Okay.
And then, so I got that phone call, and, I mean, you know, your world, that was a very bad weekend before that anyway. But, I mean, it just comes crumbling down. It seems like things are happening, and it never, it's never just one thing. It's one, and then after another. And, so we had all those things taken to take care of. My family was out of town. They came home. I have a wife and twins, so they came home, and we were getting all the arrangements made and things.
Yeah.
And dealing with the people calling, and
yeah.
I mean, it was just a, it is a hard time.
Yeah. We've talked about alcohol on this podcast before because it's something that I struggled with, man, for like 11 years, binge drinking, over drinking, you know, drinking till you're blacked out, just, you know, partying way too hard and not being responsible for my own health and the well-being of others. And so was this something that he struggled with like his entire life?
When I was younger, when I was, I don't know, up until, you know, probably 7, 8, 9, 10, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it, you know, he drank, but, you know, he would come home, have a beer or two, and then we would also socialize, you know, everything I've done in the outdoors, it would be my uncle, you know, he's been a major part in it too, and then some of my dad's friends, it was a group, you know, we all went and did things together, and then for some reason, when I got a little bit older, maybe it was because I could take care of myself a little better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then it really got bad. Yeah. You know, and I mean, yeah, I've heard you talk about the alcohol thing. Yeah. And I mean, it affects everybody. I know several people. It affected me, you know, I mean, it's, and it will. It'll steal your time away. I've heard you talk about that.
Yep, it's a thief. And so, As he's dealing with this, and this is what I've heard too, is like, you know, just because you have an issue with a substance, whether that's alcohol or drugs, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're some kind of horrible person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so even though he struggled with alcohol, but it also sounds like he did a pretty decent job of making sure that you growing up got outdoors and gave you the opportunities to become the outdoorsman that you are today.
Oh yeah. He, well, I mean, my dad was, let's say he was kind of hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was several times that, I went hunting and I didn't want to go, you know, it's the weekend. He had to work through the week. He wanted to go hunting and my parents are divorced.
Yep.
So he would have me during the weekend. And I mean, if it was deer season, you're going.
Yeah.
I mean, there's many times that you sit and just beg, Dad, I want to go. And he's like, no, nope, not yet. We're gonna push it through a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But, you know, even those hard times, it shows you, you know, if you, because we would go and we would get cold. I'd get cold. And, you know, you argue back and forth. But then a deer would walk out and all that goes away.
Exactly.
You know, you don't. So it's like if you push through the hard stuff, then there can be a reward.
Yeah.
But no, he was pretty good about, I mean, and we did everything. If there was a season, we had different spots. You know, we squirrel hunted in a spot that didn't necessarily deer hunt in, and then we deer hunt. We'd fish. We'd rabbit hunt after deer season. I mean, if it was outdoors, that's what we were doing.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah. And I had to deal with that a little bit this past weekend, right? I'm sure. You know, for those of you who follow me on social media, you saw the picture of my daughter and the turkeys that she shot this weekend.
Congratulations.
Yeah, she wanted to quit that day. She wanted to go back to the car. She was tired. She said her legs were aching and tired, and she just kind of had enough. But right in front of us. I couldn't see them, but right in front of us, the turkeys were gobbling like crazy. And so I'm like, sweetie, please just tough it out a little bit more, yeah. a little bit more. And sure enough, like you said, when those toms showed up, all that energy, she was right back into it. She, yep. So you'd be surprised on what'll change a kid's attitude, you know, especially when a deer or a turkey are right in front of them.
Oh yeah. And I mean, you know, I struggle with that part too, because like I said, I have young kids, but I know what my dad did to me. And it, I mean, I love the outdoors, obviously, but I see it go the opposite way so much.
Sometimes,
you know, people push. So
yeah, that's definitely, yeah, that's definitely a fine line in really all kids' activities is how hard do you push them? You got to push them enough so they understand that there is adversity in whatever, whether that's sports or hunting or fishing. You know, there's days where shit just doesn't happen. Right? And then there's days where you're like, oh my God, there's gobbles everywhere. Man, the rut is on and there's deer chasing, you know, bucks chasing does all over. And those are the exciting parts. But as you and I know, there's a lot of time where nothing happens in the woods too, you know? And so as a father, I'm trying to walk that fine line of, I don't want to push them to quitting. I want to push them just enough so they're motivated to go, continue to go.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, I'm pretty, I guess hardcore as far as like I go and I get blinders, and you know, I've had people before say, hey, you know, this is too much, you know, you're you know, I don't want to walk that far, I don't want to do this. So especially as young kids, you're like, all right, we're going to try to make this easy but not too easy.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. Excuse me. So your dad, and that's the thing, right? When it's deer season, it's deer season. When it's turkey season, it's turkey season. And I've been there before where, like, when my parents got divorced, my parents got divorced as well, there were times when either I was by myself because my parents had to work, or there was times where my dad had to go into work and I had to go into work with him. Or there was events that they wanted to go do and we had to tag along with them regardless of what we felt, right? And so it sounds to me like, was there ever a time when he was really hardcore into it that you wanted to quit hunting or the outdoors because he pushed you so hard?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, when I was real young, I guess, you know, 10 or 11 or so, and, you know, I'm here in Kentucky, so it doesn't get that cold, but I'm a pretty skinny guy, and I've always been, I get cold very easily. And, you know, we didn't have the money to, you know, we didn't have all these new high dollar. I was wearing a hoodie and some cotton shirts and some jersey gloves, you know.
Yep.
And, I mean, I remember one time we went and it was snowing so hard. And I was so ready to go. And I told him when we left, I said, I'm never hunting. I'm never doing this. But then the next weekend comes around and you forget those things. Yep. And then it's like, all right, I want to go.
Yep. Yep. Man, that's that's crazy. Like I've heard so many stories about, like, man, my dad made me sit in the rain for like 5 hours straight. It was pouring and you know, sometimes it sucks, and then like you said, here comes the deer. You just forget about everything. You're laser focused on the target. So would you say then that your dad was one of the main mentors in your life when it came to the outdoors?
Yes, for sure. And it was kind of it's kind of like a caveat, I guess. My dad was a big part, but my uncle was too.
Okay.
So when my dad's drinking really got out of hand a little bit, my uncle stepped up to the plate. Yeah. He took me a lot, but it was a completely different dynamic. So my dad was, let's go. We're going to tough it out. And then my uncle would be like, all right, we're going to do things a little smarter. Mm-hmm. We'll go here and get it and stay out of the rain, where my dad's like, nope, we're sitting against this tree and we're going to sit here all day and we're going to just wait.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. So. Okay. So your uncle kind of played the make you comfortable game, And if you're comfortable, then you can stay longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, it wasn't because he didn't want it as bad as my dad. Mm-hmm. He was a little bit older too.
Gotcha.
Than my dad. So he's like, you know, I don't have to do all this. You know, we can do this day and that this day. So
yeah.
Time in the woods, you know, experience.
That's a fact. Was there ever any conflict between your uncle and your dad in regards to taking you out hunting when your dad was drinking, or was your dad happy to pass you off to him?
He was happy. I mean, if my uncle, you know, if he wanted to take me, he would at least take me to his house and be like, all right, you can stay here for a few days. You can go. And I think because deep down he probably knew, like, I'm not getting up in the morning or, you know, I'm not going to do this. So yeah. I'll let him go and enjoy it with Billy. So,
yeah. Okay. So it kind of sounds like your dad played a role up until the drinking got real bad. And then your uncle stepped in and took over, for him.
Yeah.
Was there still, after your dad's drinking got bad, was there still times where you and him still got together and went out into the woods?
Oh yeah. Okay. And I mean, even with my uncle, if it wasn't just deer, you know, we'd rabbit hunt, there'd be all of us. And okay. even dad would go, cause I mean, you're walking around, you don't have to be quiet.
Yep.
And I mean, you know, he'd have a, so, you know, we would do those types of things, but, no, we would, when I started bow hunting, my uncle wasn't much, he would bow hunt some, and my dad didn't bow hunt anymore, but he would help me.
Gotcha.
And then we would go and we would sit on the ground and do, you know, try to, this is what you're looking for. This is your ranges. This is, you know, early range finder days. If they were even there, we didn't have them or I didn't have them,
yeah.
You know, but yeah. No, he would go and take us. So
I can remember the first times I ever went, deer hunting before I had a rangefinder. I had 3 pins on my sight, and I think it was 10, 20, and 30 yards on my, my bow. And there's no way I was hitting a deer at 30 yards back then, yeah. You know? And I can remember sitting in a fence line, and I would take 10 steps. And to me, that was 10 yards. That's what I thought.
Oh, yeah.
10 steps. And then I would put a paint stick. I had cut the bottom of a paint stick off, put it right in the field. Another 10 steps, another paint stick, a paint stirring stick. And then another one at 30. And if they came in between that, then I knew that I had a shot opportunity, right? But the thing about it is I never, like, I was out putting those in, you know, I was ruining my scent stream. I was just, you know, everything I did was wrong back then.
Yeah.
Was there a point as a kid, like, cause sometimes kids don't understand, right? Especially when it comes to alcoholism or drug abuse, kids start to have an awakening. They start to understand that there's something going on outside of just dad being tired or sleeping or, you know, angry or whatever. Was there an age for you where you kind of had a realization like, hey, this is a problem?
Oh yeah. I mean, somewhere, I think I was around 13 or so, you know, like you said, tired, you know, my dad worked, he was a delivery guy for an alcohol company.
Yep.
So he would work long days, but he was also off. He worked 4 days. He was off on Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Okay.
But he would sleep. I mean, he'd get up at 4 o'clock in the morning because that was his normal time to get up. But then, I mean, by 9 o'clock, he's back asleep, and he's going to sleep until 3. He'll wake up and he'll start drinking again, and he's back asleep by 8. So somewhere around the age of like 13, I was like, you know, no more. I'm wasting all my time at my dad's house. And then that's another time when my uncle come in, you know, even if it wasn't hunting, you know, I could go, do stuff with him.
Yeah.
But yeah, about 13, you're like, no, this isn't, because that was my dad's excuse. Like, yeah, he said, oh, I'm tired, I work hard. Yeah. You know, that's why I'm taking all these naps. And that's not what it was. Yeah, you know, because that was when I realized.
Yeah, it's because you drink 18 beers or whatever the, you know, the case
yeah
is. So,
yeah.
Did your uncle ever get pissed at your dad?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, he, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, he would apologize for him, you know, I don't know why, you know, this is the way it is, or, but, yeah, oh, yeah, he would, I mean, you know, it would, you know how the old days are, yeah, too. We did things a little different back then, but I can remember, you know, we went rabbit hunting one time, and 15, 20 yards from the truck was a regular woven wire fence that was knocked down. I mean, it's 2 foot up off the ground,
yeah,
and, my dad fell over it. I mean, he's a grown man. You just step over it. Mm-hmm. Everyone else did. And he fell. And my uncle's like, go to the truck. Like, you're just staying here today.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, that I'm guessing is frustrating. My wife has told me stories back because, you know, I don't think he likes to hear the word alcoholic, but. And maybe, yeah, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, but he definitely drank a lot of alcohol. And there was times where her friends would be over and she would be ashamed of that.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I don't want to get too far into that, because if she hears the story, she'd probably be pissed at me. But I mean, that's the thing. Like you start to wake up and you're like, Jesus, stop being a loser. You know what I mean?
Just
change your ways, and you're pass. You know, he had a sleepover and he would pass out somewhere in the house, and then all his friends would, like, she would paint his toenails or paint his fingernails while he's while he's passed out, right? And so, that's a little, I guess, kind of funny, but go ahead.
You know, and I say this, you know, I'm kind of an open book, you know, mm-hmm, your wife may be the same way, but I mean, yes, my dad was an alcoholic, but it doesn't mean you don't, you know, you can have someone who's going through stuff and you can still love them.
Absolutely.
You know, it's your dad.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, I'm not down talking him. It's just the truth.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. And sometimes the truth, dude, is the hardest thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So Did this then progressively get worse to the point where you were just not even hunting with your dad anymore and just hunting with your uncle?
Yeah. From about 13 to, well, I got my driver's license.
Okay.
And even when I got my driver's license, because my uncle didn't bow hunt, that's when I started bow hunting, because I could, you know, I didn't have to wait on someone to take me. So between about 13 and 16, yeah, I really hunted with him. And then after that, I kind of just went on my own. You know, they had set the foundations and taught me stuff. But then it was go. And if I wasn't working after work, that's what I was doing.
Yeah. So even though he had this issue, he did, along with your uncle, set this foundation for you that allowed you to, even though you didn't have help anymore, you were still able to have enough knowledge of the outdoors to where you could go enjoy it by yourself.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, he kind of set the stage, you know, I grew up, my dad was a good hunter, especially back in those days. He was killing, you know, good deer, 130s, you know, I mean, so you grow up looking at him on the wall and you're like, that's what I want. That's what I want. Or, you know, bigger or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, what were there times where you wish your dad was with you, as far as like you were wanting him to come out and hunt with you, and he chose alcohol instead?
Oh yeah. So, okay. Many times. Yeah.
All right. So we got this story now. All right. You shot this buck behind you. And if you're watching this on YouTube, there's a mounted buck behind you. I'm guessing that's him.
Yeah, that's him.
Okay. Let's talk about this buck per se and the connection that you had with this animal and also with your dad leading up to this. Cause I'm assuming there's some kind of connection here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like I said, my dad, it was 2020 when he passed away.
Okay.
And we had him cremated, and I ended up buying a farm because of him.
Mm-hmm.
A few hundred yards off the road, I don't know, there's a little opening, but there's this giant white oak tree in the middle of this. It's old pasture.
Yep.
There were cattle on it when I got it.
Yep.
And I mean, this thing is, you know, three of us can't touch arms around the trunk. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the opening day of deer season, which is the second or the first Saturday in September here in Kentucky, I built him a cross and I put it under that white oak tree and we spread his ashes. I had people out and we did it because it was deer season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was his favorite time of the year too. So I hunted that year and it was different. I spent a lot of time especially on that farm, reflecting on, you know, your dad, what has happened. And then 2021 come around and didn't think anything of it, just went about the normal stuff. Well, I had turned that little pasture into a clover plot. And, I mean, it's at the front of the property, so I'm like, I'm probably not going to get much action here.
Yeah.
And then that deer started showing up. And I'm like everybody else, you know, I have a little group of people I talk to. All we talk about is hunting, you know, that's,
right.
I mean, day in, day out.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to kill this deer. And I said, I'm going to kill him out of that tree. And they're like, I'm like, but I don't want to mess it up. I don't want to actually damage the tree.
Yeah.
So I took an extension ladder.
I saw the picture. And, this is where it gets good.
Yeah. And I'm like, and they had the same. They're like, man, you're so dumb. There's no way. And I'm like, dude, I'm going to leave this here for 2 months. I'm like, it's just going to be a part of the woods. It can't be any different than a ladder stand.
Right.
You know, sticking off of a telephone pole. So, and even then, like, I had to cut a couple limbs. So I took the limbs and the sides of the extension ladder a hollow.
Yep.
I shoved it in the side. Yep. Just anything.
Anything.
Yeah, and they're like, man, this is never going to work. I'm like, I've got to try it.
Yeah.
And
did you know about this buck before all of this went down? Did you have any history with him?
I had two pictures and one video, but I didn't even know about the video until after I had already killed
him. Okay.
But there – go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're fine. So when so in 2020, you spread his ashes under this tree, right? Was it the spring of 2021, you turned it into a food plot?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, and in 2021, you also attached this extension ladder to, to the tree. Okay, so it's not a mobile setup by any means.
No.
I can imagine somebody on public land just taking an extension ladder, as, you know, like a mile deep into the timber. You get picked, when did you have the first picture of this deer?
It was about mid-August.
Mid-August, okay.
And what actually got me started on this area, the reason I was even going to hunt it, because there was another deer. And, I mean, he was a good deer.
Mm-hmm.
But he was using the area, and he was a little more frequent.
Yeah.
Well, he was a lot more frequent, actually. But I could see him. I mean, I have a barn in the front of the property that I kind of work out of. It's where I keep some of my equipment. I'd see him.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty common. It was just his area.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And I always wanted to kill a full velvet deer. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who they're just different, something different.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the reason I actually went into that stand, was to kill the other deer. Because, I mean, you know, two pictures, and I didn't even know about the video. I'm like, he might come through, he might not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What year did you buy the farm?
2020.
Okay, 2020.
Yeah.
Was this after or before your dad passed?
It was after.
After, okay. Yeah. All right, so so this is a brand new farm to you, and this is the, is this the first hunting season you had in it?
No, I got to hunt 2020. But I mean, I feel like it takes, it's a 90 acre farm.
Okay.
But I feel like it takes some time. Yeah. No matter, I mean, at least 3 years. Like I went and walked it last week, in a little new area, and I'm finding stuff you didn't know about. I mean, sometimes it takes time to learn the farm.
Absolutely. It does. Absolutely. It does. And so no knowledge of this deer the first season that you hunted it?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any knowledge of any deer on that property? Or like when you first bought it, why did you buy this particular farm?
To be honest, it was in the area I wanted as far as like where we're established.
Yep.
And then the price was good. And the gentleman who sold it to me really wanted to sell it.
Yeah.
I actually looked at two other farms before I purchased this one, and this one had the most woods on it.
Okay.
Yeah, around here there's a lot of cattle, so everything's pasture.
Yep.
This one had the most woods and a creek running through it and draws, and then I had the tops of the hills. I was like, I can put food plots here, so it just laid out best for what I was looking for.
Okay. And did you have trail camera pictures? I mean, did the previous owner show you, like, did he hunt it? Did he have any trail camera pictures or any type of deer that he knew about on the farm?
No. He's a farmer. I mean, he is just 100%, and he hates deer. Before I bought the farm, if you asked him, he would have let you hunt it.
Yeah.
I gave people a month after I bought it. I'm like, you have a month to go get your deer stands off and get, you know, all these things out of here. I had one picture of, I had a guy show me a picture of a deer he had killed off of it years and years prior. But other than that, no.
Gotcha. And so the first picture of the buck that you got, not the one that you killed, but the other one, what was he?
He's a 9-point.
9-point?
Yeah, he's probably, 130-inch 9-point.
Okay, not bad.
And that, you know, that, yeah, that, well, and that's also full velvet.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so. Yeah.
Velvet makes them look bigger than what they really are. But still, 130 as a 9-pointer, man, that's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's pretty good genetics, I guess, around here. I mean, if you get into the 150s, you're getting pretty close to the top. You know, everybody has a couple, so.
Yeah. All right, so the 2021 hunting season comes around, and you had a couple pictures of that buck and a couple, you know, you had some pictures of another buck. Outside of this extension ladder that you put in this tree, did you have any other tree stands set on this farm that you were excited to hunt?
I don't think so. I'm a saddle hunter. Now I do have some blinds on it now, but it was learning. You know, I'm not going to go put something until I hunt it out of a, you know, until I mobile hunt it and I figure out, oh, I need to be in this spot versus that spot. I didn't really have anything.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man, that's something that you brought up just now, that that's kind of what I do, is I will mobile hunt an area until I find what I would call a great funnel or some kind of pinch point. And then I'll put a permanent stand in it. If I feel it's worthy of a permanent stand. Other than that, it's all mobile. And so, that's a great point. People probably should do more of that. Now the day that you ended up, what day did of the season, or what was the date, if you can remember, that you shot this buck?
September 5th.
5th. So that's 5 days into the Kentucky season, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So.
No. It was the opening.
Oh, it was opening day.
Yeah. The season in Kentucky is the first Saturday in September.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Yeah. So this was first time in the woods all season.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. All right. And so what made you want to go hunt this particular ladder stand, this ladder stand, that particular day?
Really just because I was talking to my buddies about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I mean, you know, your first set's always your best. So I'm like, this is what I'm going to try. And then I didn't really have a plan for the season. So I'm like, this is the only one I know for sure. Mm-hmm. So we're going to throw what we got at it. And then if it doesn't work, we'll adjust and move on.
Right. What, when did you put that ladder stand up? That ladder up?
Late July.
Okay. So there was time for the deer to get used to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So there's a lot of time in a tree stand or in a tree, mm-hmm. right? And your brain can go one of a million directions. Okay. And so you're sitting in this tree stand right above a cross that you put there for your dad, right in front of a food plot that you planted over top of your dad's ashes. What was going through your mind as you're sitting there waiting for deer to show up?
Actually, it was being pretty uncomfortable. I hunt out of a saddle.
Yep.
So I didn't even have a platform. I just stood on, I mean, the limbs on this thing are, you know, 12 inches in diameter.
Yeah.
So I literally just tethered off and I was standing on a limb. I've never done that before. So it was kind of uncomfortable on my feet, you know, after a couple hours and I was moving around. But a lot of nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, just because you would look out and then I'd look down and then you'd look around and you'd look down, mm-hmm. you know.
A lot of memories.
Yeah, a lot of memories.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny what the mind does when mm-hmm. it's bored. And I don't want to mean, I guess I don't want to say bored because you're doing something that you ultimately love. But when it gets a chance to decompress and think about everything that's happened, everything that can happen, man, I bet you I've thought about throughout the course of my hunting career, I've thought about every decision I've ever made, whether it was good, whether it was bad, right? Whether I, you know, hey, should I have done this? Should I have done, like, that's just, your brain just goes off. And
Reflection mode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so there was a lot of reflection done in that tree that day, along with you kicking yourself going, Jesus, man, I'm standing on a limb like a turkey, you know, like hanging off that thing. And so, okay, we're getting to the good part here, right? Mm-hmm. How long were you in that tree before deer started showing up?
Probably, well, the first deer come in, I mean, I hadn't been in the stand 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I got in, it doesn't get dark till, I don't know, it's dark late in mm-hmm. September,
right?
Or daylight. But I hadn't been there 20 minutes. And I probably got in at 4:30 or 5. But it just, I think I may have spooked it getting in because when it come out, it's like, you know, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then it kind of left. But then it was another 2 hours before I seen anything else.
Oh, wait a second. So you saw this deer 20 minutes into your hunt?
No, it was a completely different deer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you did see a deer 20 minutes into your hunt. You thought maybe you spooked him. And then it was how long? How many? 45 minutes until another deer showed up?
No, about 2 hours.
2 hours. Okay. 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so as to what buck or what deer showed up 2 hours later?
The first deer that stepped out was that 9-point.
Okay.
I was telling you about. And then 10 seconds later, this one stepped out.
Bachelored up. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, between the ladder and the things that happened here, you know, I feel, I mean, as odd as it sounds, I feel like I was meant to kill that deer.
Yeah.
I mean, there was so much stuff that went wrong because he come from my downwind side. He crossed what I walked in on. He crossed my scent walking to the stand. I never thought the deer were coming from that side of the plot.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just, I didn't have any binoculars, so he was probably 110 yards away.
Yeah.
And I could see horns, but I didn't know who it was. So I'm trying to look through a rangefinder that's, I don't know what little magnification right. that thing has. But, and I said, as soon as they stepped out, they were kind of heading my way a little bit.
Yeah.
But they were milling around. I said, whichever one of you gets here first.
Yeah.
You know. If,
yeah.
So.
But when you saw this buck here, you, because that looks bigger than a 139 point.
Yeah. Yeah. He went to one, Pope and Young is 144 and 6/8.
Okay. So 140, that's, I mean, that's noticeably bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost 15 yeah. inches bigger than the other one. And so, but you had it in your mind, the first one of these deer that's within shooting range, I don't care, it's getting an arrow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because, I mean, the wind is, they were wrong. I mean, they were just, they wrong, were doing yeah. what they should have been doing for that plot, checking the wind. And but for some reason they did not get my scent. Doesn't make any sense. But yeah. I mean,
sounds
for 100 yards they were downwind.
Sounds to me like your old man was blowing wind straight up in the air or something. You know, kicking the thermals up out of off the ground or something.
I guess I don't know. I mean, it was yeah. When it's meant to be,
it's meant to be. That's a fact. All right. So as this. Who was the lead buck here? I mean, was, because something had to happen. It sounded like that nine-pointer was heading to the plot first.
The nine-pointer was heading, he was coming first. And I guess they were bachelored up, but he was the more dominant one because mm-hmm. he was leading, but when this deer would catch up, he'd skirt off. So,
oh, okay.
he, you know, he'd push away a little bit. So eventually he had pushed him away to where he came. He was in the lead, and they were coming down the plot,
yeah,
eating. And then, for some reason, about 40 yards, they went into the woods, like, away. And I was like, all right. And it's pretty thick.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, we'll just sit here and wait. I mean, what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
But then they started walking down about 5 yards inside the woods, and they were still going past me. And... there was an alfalfa, or I have an alfalfa field in another part, and I think that's where they were going.
Yeah.
And he was coming down the edge of the woods, and I'm trying to range, you know how they're coming, yep. You're trying to pick a spot, especially when you have a window to shoot.
Yep. All so those branches on those big oaks, too, once they get out, then they hang down.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and yep. So they hang down, and that's like blocks a lot of things if you get too high in the
yep.
tree. Okay,
yep.
And so by this time they went in the timber. I'm guessing you said, "Oh man, they're gone" at some point in the
mm-hmm.
whole experience. Yep, but then they kind of flanked back in on the,
no they
were in the woods.
Yeah, they stayed in the woods.
Okay.
I guess they got what they wanted of the clover and were going to make their way to the other field. So they were going to use the security cover
yeah.
to come down about 5 yards inside the woods.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And so you picked a window and you got a range. You it sounds to me like mm-hmm. you got a range on them. How
yeah.
far was it?
I got a range on that window.
Oh,
no. Where I was going to shoot.
Yeah.
It was 20 yards.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Exact,
all right.
Yeah.
All right. You made it sound, man, I thought it was going to be a poke or something like that. You were going to reach
no,
for him, but that's
no.
nothing. And so, I mean, you just step in the window?
Yeah. They were coming down the edge of the woods, or inside the woods again. And like I said, they would, the 9 point would push away.
Mm-hmm.
So you would catch a glimpse of them in the brush, and then when they got to my area, it would open up a little bit. Well, he happened to be the first one that come through.
Mm-hmm.
There was a honeysuckle that he had to go behind before he hit this window.
Mm-hmm.
And when he hit that honeysuckle, I drew, and he stepped out, and as soon as he was about to step out, that 9-point stomped.
Uh-oh.
I mean, I guess he caught me drawling. He caught you. Yeah, he caught me drawling. And, but he was already in the window. But when he stomped, it made him stop. So I didn't have to mat at him or anything like that. He stopped and settled the pin in and touched the trigger. And then, you know, the woods goes chaotic, you know,
right.
Running in the dry leaves. And I just, I'm on top of a hill anyway, and he took off over the, down the hill.
Okay. So when you released the arrow, did you see it hit the buck?
No.
No.
I used to, when I was younger, I had a very bad problem with dropping my arm because I wanted to see the arrow.
Yep.
So I've made it to where I just don't even care, or I try not to care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it's going to go where it's supposed to. Let's just have faith, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. That's a great point, man. I used to do that a lot. And
it was terrible.
There's still some times where I catch myself doing it, especially when I'm practicing out longer,
mm-hmm.
longer ranges. I want to see the flight of the arrow because I think that's pretty cool, like the arc in it.
Yeah.
And so, you didn't know you hit him. Did you see him afterwards run away? Like the tail wag? Was he had the weak knees or anything like that?
No, I mean as soon as I shot, he wheeled and. Was going down the hill, and I mean, I may have got two sightings of mm-hmm. him, you know, just briefly going down, but it wasn't, I don't know, 5 to 10 seconds, and then there was a loud crash.
Okay.
And
so there's your indication right there something fell down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at that moment, then, right after everything that's happened. Right. What was going through your head at that moment when you heard the crash?
Oh, I lost it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just absolutely, you know, like everybody else, you know.
Yep.
It was shaking. I called my uncle and told him. My wife actually was the first call.
Mm-hmm.
I was basically in tears. Yeah. I mean, I was and then called some of my buddies. Me and one of my other buddies, we have this thing, if you kill a deer that you're going to get mounted, you don't gut it. So, like, if he kills one, I go to him, we'll get the deer out, I'll gut it. And then if I kill one, he comes to me. It's just, you know, something we did years ago when we always hunted together.
Yeah.
Well, I called him, and of course, he didn't answer that day. So I give him grief about that all the time. But I called, and then... my neighbor here, one of my good buddies, he said, I'm coming. He said, I'm coming right now. So I just sat down. I mean, I just leaned against the tree and just tried to soak it in.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, obviously even with an extension ladder, as great as it was, I'm not coming down. I couldn't, you know, you're shaking. I'm like, we're not getting down.
This is kind of a weird question, but did you feel like your dad was with you that day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I believe I'm pretty sure I said, thank you, Dad, like out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. It's amazing. One of my favorite parts of hunting, especially in moments like this, is the feelings, right? I mean, it in a way, it's kind of why we do it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, do what we do. And one of my favorite moments is when you get out of the tree or out of the blind. And I think this is why I like shed hunting so much, is because you're the very first person to ever touch that shed antler or to ever touch that deer, right? You're the first person to do it. What was it like walking up to that deer and touching it for the first time?
Well, also him being in velvet
that
was a whole, that's a whole different feeling. Cause I mean,
the rarity,
I don't
of
guess.
It.
It was, I kind of just stood there.
Yeah.
When I got to him, you know, some deer you run up to, you grab them, you want to swing them around, check them out. I didn't. I just kind of stood in front of him and just looked at him. Mm-hmm. Just kind of a all or a what just happened. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't.
Yeah.
But the feelings were definitely there.
Yeah. 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 You know, I've never been in your shoes before. Mm-hmm. But when my daughter shot this turkey, I had the feelings, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I just, it for me, it wasn't like a sadness. I didn't cry or anything this time. But I was just so proud of her in this moment. And not to take away from, you know, not to take away from your story here. As you're sitting there, just looking at what you've just done, those feelings sound like they continued. And they, mm-hmm. they just, was it sadness or was it happiness that hit you?
I don't know. I think you can have both.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, it's definitely an accomplishment. Uh-huh. So you're happy about that. And then, well, the realization also, I hate to be greedy, but in Kentucky, you only get one buck.
Yeah.
So if you kill opening day or the faster you kill, the less season you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was kind of like you said, you know, he gave it to you or he, mm-hmm. you know, it was just, thank you. It was, thank you.
Yeah. I feel you, man. Happy, but I mean, it's cool because now you have this memory that's hanging on your wall.
Oh, yeah.
And it's connected to a person who you loved, right? Who may not be there anymore, but in a way, he's still there every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but whenever I look at my mounts, you know, I look at it almost like a piece of art, but at the same time, it's a physical memory of a time that I found joy in nature. And I get to look at that every day, and I get to relive that experience every single day. And when I get my daughter's turkey and fan, or her beard and fan back, I'm going to be able to look at that every day. Is that something that you do, and does it take you back every day?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, even not with this deer, but other deer. I mean, I can tell you, when I see it, I mean, it's like I could draw you the picture.
Exactly.
You know.
Man, I bet you there's people out there who think deer hunters, or just hunters in general, are crazy. Right?
Oh, yeah.
What was the wind direction? Well, it did this. Thermals did this. Here's my access route. And this was 15, 20 years ago type of thing. And so, and I think that right there, the connections, the emotions, the feelings that we all get when we do this with the people that we love. And it's just one big connection to each other and connection to, and I'm going to sound like a hippie here, but connection to plant this planet that we live on, right? Nature. And it's such an amazing thing.
And especially, you know, in the day and age we are, where everything's technology.
Oh yeah.
You know, everybody's on their phone or computer or TV or whatever it is.
Yep.
But, my kids aren't old enough yet to really start the hunting thing, but they'll go out with me.
Yeah.
And I pray every day. I'm like, I hope this is something you fall in love with, because it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
You know, that phone is a second, but you'll remember these things forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, grief is another emotion that we all mm-hmm. at some point go through especially when I lost my grandparents. I got one grandma left, but when I lost my other grandparents, they played such a huge role in my life. I was very sad when they mm-hmm. when they passed, and grief. And there's things that help with that grief a little bit. Do you feel like hunting or the outdoors helps with the grief of losing a loved one?
in this particular case, I don't know.
Okay.
Because that 2020 season was hard.
Right.
Because, yeah, you know, they have different stages of grief.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was stuck in that anger part for a long time. You know, mm-hmm. how come you did all this drinking mm-hmm. and didn't, you know, I had to spend a lot of time outside, and I'm sure that did help because if you bottle it up, you're not going to get past it.
Absolutely.
But like you said, if you sit in the stand, you're going to think about everything mm-hmm. for some point of a time.
Yeah. And in a way that's like therapy on,
mm-hmm.
You have the ability to heal yourself, from that grief or from that pain because I think the anger in a situation like that almost comes from maybe betrayal. Like you feel like what he did betrayed you in a way.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But you get to think about that and you get to cycle through all these memories when you're in a tree and you're like, okay, I'm pissed. I'm sad. Mm-hmm. I'm over it. Or not necessarily, you're like, you never really are over it. Amazing story. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm happy that you told it, but I'm not happy about what happened. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And so as far as the whole story, because I'm sure we would all rather have our loved ones here with us now as opposed to not be here. And it takes guts, you know, especially in today's world and we're men, you know. It takes guts to come on here and tell this story, man. And I really appreciate that. And thank you very much for doing so. And thank you very much for your time today, man. And congratulations on a stud buck, velvet buck on your wall, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, you know. Just even tell my, you know.
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry you cut out there for a second. Okay. So what were you going to say?
I said, thank you for having me on. You know, it kind of felt silly to write somebody to tell my story or whatever,
but
I feel like it's such a deep connection.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you for the time to do all this.
Yeah. Nature's a funny thing, man. It has a way it's such so beautiful in so many ways, whether you're hunting or you're going on a hike or camping. And it's like I tell people all the time, if you're having a bad day, just go for a walk outside, get mm-hmm. some fresh air, go look at a bird, right? Go do something outside and you're going to find some sort of peace, I feel. And so, mm-hmm. Travis, man, I really appreciate your time today. Good luck on all your upcoming seasons. And I hope those prayers that you pray to get your kids involved are answered. And that someday you're going to be that, you know, they're going to be sitting on your lap in the woods, chasing gobblers or deer or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, anything. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for the time.